I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey.
Hey, everybody, this is Richard Deitch, and welcome to the Sports Media Podcast. My producer is Patrick Antonetti. Two guests this week. First up, TJ Quinn, fine investigative reporter for ESPN. He is followed by Chad Finn, the sports media writer and general columnist of the Boston Globe. In this podcast, TJ discusses his reporting on WNBA star Brittney Griner, who's being detained in Russia, the road ahead for her, the political component, what it means for players who have played in Russia, in Europe in the past. I'm talking about women's basketball players, whether she can get a fair trial in Russia, and just how you go about reporting what is a tricky story to report, because there is a part of this where the people who are very close to Griner and love Griner and care about Griner do not want this to be that big, because that would have political implications in terms of Brittney Griner returning. So TJ Quinn to start, and then Chad Finn and I get into the craziness of the NFL broadcasting season. Joe Buck and Troy Aikman to ESPN, what that means for both of those entities, the prospect of Joe Davis calling the World Series for Fox, Amazon's thoughts, and then the media impact on the unretirement of Tom Brady, which is obviously a very big piece in Chad's neck of the world in Boston. So TJ Quinn to start, Chad Finn to finish, coming up on the Sports Media Podcast. All right. As I mentioned at the top, TJ Quinn of ESPN is our first guest today. TJ, of course, you know from his outstanding investigative work at ESPN. Prior to that, was at the Daily News in New York City, among other places, and was a baseball writer. I've known him for many, many years. I have immense, immense respect for his reporting abilities and just how he's, you know, he's been really able to, if you're a sports fan, do some exploratory reporting in multiple mediums, whether it's television or print digital or audio. And pleased to be joined by TJ Quinn of ESPN. TJ, thanks for coming on the Sports Media Podcast.
Pleasure is mine, man. Thank you.
All right. So let's, this is strictly going to be on Brittney Griner's detention in Russia. So as we're taping this, TJ, on Monday, March 14th in the morning, can you give my listeners just sort of an overview of where things stand right now?
Well, it's funny. That should be a simpler, it sounds like a simpler question than it is. We don't know a ton. We know she's been in custody in Russia since February 17th. We know that the Russian authorities say that she had vape cartridges in her bag as she arrived in Moscow, that they say has hashish oil. And beyond that, we don't know a ton. I mean, there's a history in Russia of prominent people being detained for very specious reasons. They have planted drugs on people before. We have seen there, you know, a couple other Americans in custody right now whose cases have become very political. There was an Israeli woman in 2019 who was stopped with cannabis during a layover in Russia, and her case was resolved because the Russian government cut a deal with the Israeli government, and Putin ended up pardoning her, basically in exchange for access to land in Jerusalem. So she's in this unbelievable morass right now, where she is in the Russian criminal justice system. She could face, depending on how she's charged, anywhere from 7 to 10 years, or even 10 to 20 years. And you've got people around her and the federal government trying like crazy to keep this from getting to be too big a story, because if it does, then it's no longer a criminal justice issue, then it becomes a political issue. They really don't want Vladimir Putin's attention on this. So here's this story of one of the greatest athletes in the world in detention in a hostile country. But the people who are trying to get her out know they can't raise too much noise about it because that could put her in greater danger.
All right. So there's a lot obviously there that you just said. So let's start here. Understanding that this is a complex story and that you are not in the country where Brittany Griner is being held. So a lot of the reporting, TJ, obviously is not on the ground. You have to sort of think about how am I going to approach this? Given that, how have you approached the reporting of this story?
Desperately. I mean, there's, you know, you're right. I can't just go sit in a Russian court for a bond hearing or an arraignment. There is precious little official information. And even then, you don't know if you could trust it. So the first thing I did was reach out to legal experts I know who have worked in Russia. I spent some time there. We did an a really long look a few years ago at Putin's involvement in international sport. And everybody I talked to immediately said, yeah, they want to try to keep this low key. And then I started reaching out to and getting a hold of people around Brittany Griner who there's a clear message that they want to get out. Look, we get it. We love the support. We absolutely agree that there are inequities, you know, between men's and women's sports in the U.S. and around the world. But anytime somebody in a, you know, usually very well-intentioned way tries to raise the alarm about why this isn't a bigger story, they cringe because that's dangerous for them. So I've tried to reach out to the appropriate government officials. But it's a weird story because you can't get access. I can't call her lawyer in Russia. I don't know who it is. I can't, you know, get a hold of her. So it's, you know, it is tricky to vet the information you're piecing together.
Let's, there's a couple of things to get to, but let's start with the WNBA and Griner's representation. Brittany Griner's agent is Lindsay Kagawa-Kolas of the Wasserman Media Group. I've dealt with her for many years, just when I did women's basketball, really smart and excellent at what she does. From reading your piece, and kudos to Michelle Vopel as well, who did a phenomenal explainer with you on this, TJ, it's very clear that the WNBA obviously supports Brittany Griner and wants her home. At the same time, they're almost intentionally being low-key here because they don't want to make it a cause celeb. I'm sort of extrapolating here so that it doesn't put too much attention where her case becomes political. So in the course of your reporting, whether you're talking to Wasserman Group or whether you're talking to the WNBA, have either they made it clear to you that they don't want to talk, or are they even sort of not taking reporters' queries because they're intentionally trying to not turn this into a political story?
Yeah, it's very deliberate. They got guidance from the State Department early on, everybody did, that you want to keep your heads down. So here's the needle they're trying to thread. You've got people screaming about why, and screaming's not fair. I mean, it people, you know, I'm not going to, you know, I think they have good motivations, but you've got people trying to raise alarms about why isn't the WNBA doing more? Why isn't the White House or why aren't the White House or the State Department doing more? Why isn't the union doing more? There was actually a meeting on Friday between WNBA, union officials, Brittany Griner's representatives, her wife, just to get everyone on the same page that, hey, look, we are doing everything we can. And I got a strong sense from people around Brittany Griner. They feel like the White House and State Department are completely engaged. But I mean, that is some needle to thread in the year 2022, trying to convince the public, especially the part of the public that lives its life on social media. Yeah, trust the institutions to do what they're supposed to do. We are not in a place as a society to think that way. And So they don't want hashtags. They don't want, you know, members of Congress, you know, like Sheila Jackson Lee and Colin Allred in Texas, you know, raising the alarm like they have been. I mean, when Secretary of State Anthony Blinken was asked about this last week, he purposely did not use, or well, I'll say noticeably, did not use Brittany Griner's name. And because they're well aware that you do that, it's not just about raising attention. If you raise her profile, you raise her value as an asset. So right now, it could go either way for her. A prosecutor could think, I don't want this headache. Get her out of Russia. They have so many domestic issues to deal with. They're filling the jails right now with protesters. Experts I spoke to said that they may just want to get this done and get her out of there. But if she becomes, you know, so if there's so much attention on her, at some point, the economics of it are that her value as an asset is such that Russia can't ignore it and they can try to get something out of the U.S. government. Right now, it seems like Vladimir Putin has, you know, bigger things on his plate than an American basketball star. But that's the line they're trying to walk. Reassure everybody, look, we are engaged. We just can't talk about it.
How do you evaluate the, you know, there's sort of been some pieces out there, and probably will be more, that sort of will posit that, hey, if Brittany Griner was Tom Brady, you know, LeBron James, Mike Trout, you know, name your equivalent male very famous star. Maybe that's not even a perfect equivalent, but you know what I'm getting at, TJ.
Right, absolutely.
That the press coverage would be over the top. What's interesting there to me is that I think what you have learned, because, you know, you've probably been reporting this as much as anybody in the U.S., is that there would be a – I'm not saying the media should necessarily follow the State Department's order, but if that kind of sort of coverage existed day after day, drumbeat after drumbeat, it would raise the profile of the case and then theoretically potentially could hurt the efforts to try to bring her home. But I just wanted to sort of get your even almost sort of top line evaluation. There's certainly some truth that if it was, you know, a very, very famous male athlete, it would be a much bigger story. At the same time, as you just stated, I think very smartly, if it becomes a bigger story, that is the opposite in terms of helping this person potentially get out of there.
Right. I mean, that's the paradox of this is here is where the lack of attention we pay to women's sports in this country actually works in Brittany Griner's favor. Because if it was one of those athletes, if it was LeBron or Tom Brady, you could not contain the story. It would just be too big. I mean, these are people who, you know, they transcend sport and their celebrity. And, you know, look, there are certain female athletes where that would be the case as well. You know, I would argue
Serena Williams.
Yeah, Serena Williams. I mean, imagine if she was in custody, what the reaction would be. You know, women's basketball doesn't permeate the culture the way tennis does, gymnastics, figure skating. And we get, have many, many conversations about that. And when you speak to people around Brittany Griner, they say, hey, look, these are great conversations. We love these conversations. We just don't want to have them right now. Let's wait till, you know, she's safe. And which, you know, kind of brings you to another problem is when is she going to be safe? I mean, again, we talk about trying to keep her out of the political realm. So this doesn't become a diplomatic case. You want to keep it, you know, sort of under the criminal justice system. But even then, she is in serious peril. And people have, you know, I've seen plenty of people speculate if she did or didn't have those cartridges with her. I have no idea. I have no way to evaluate that evidence. In some ways, it doesn't matter. Yes, Russia does. And again, anything I say, I am not an expert on this. I just speak to a lot of experts on this. And what those experts have told me is you do have rule of law there to a certain extent. There is a criminal justice system that can function. There is due process. But that is all subject to the whim of the people who run it. If at some point somebody says, we're going to get something out of this and she's going to spend time in jail and I don't care what the evidence says, or, you know, we're going to make political hay out of this, it will happen. So, you know, that's the really delicate dance that they're doing over there is, hey, look, we understand there's going to be some kind of penalty here. She may well do jail time. And, you know, that's, you know, in some ways that could end up being sort of a best case scenario. And it may be that we're in for a long haul here, and you're asking people to ignore this. I think there's, I don't know. I get the sense that people feel like these situations are somehow resolved quickly. This one may not be, this may take a very long time.
Yeah. And that's just really awful to comprehend for Brittany Griner. The backdrop of this obviously is Russia's invasion of the Ukraine, the collapse in U.S.-Russia relations. I mean, the collapse in, you know, Russia's relations with the free and peaceful world, to be blunt. You know, once upon a time, TJ, my thought process would have been that the way to get Griner out would be to have the people who are associated with her Russian basketball team, which I think is UMMC Ekaterinburg. I'm probably mispronouncing.
No, it's pretty close. Ekaterinburg, yeah.
Okay. And so, you know, usually is sort of, I think people in the women's basketball world know, you know, players play abroad. The ones who played in Russia usually play for oligarchs. They can get paid extraordinary amounts of money versus what they get paid domestically, and that's why they go. But, you know, usually the people who own these teams are pretty well-connected, super wealthy people connected to the government. So my thought initially would have been that, you know, is there somebody within this the sports franchise who can talk to Russian officials and sort of be a liaison? But, you know, from your reporting, TJ, and just sort of if you just sort of use common sense here, the Russian invasion has changed the equation on this, right? Like that's where the perhaps the normal liaison lines have been blown up because the Western world is chasing the oligarchs to start with. Who knows how the oligarchs stand right now in terms of their relationship with Putin. So, you know, this real potential lifeline sort of now just doesn't exist for her, which again complicates matters more.
Hugely. I mean, it's really funny. You know, every bit of this, funny is probably the wrong word. I mean, but every bit of this situation, it's everything is Schrodinger's cat, right? Everything's alive and dead at the same time. The war means that she's in more danger, but it also means in some ways she may be in less danger. There's a randomness to this, you know, which is what makes it so fraught. It could go either way. The fact that there's a war right now means Putin and his government are distracted, have much bigger things to worry about. On the other hand, it also means that the relationship between the oligarchs and the Kremlin is not what it has been for a couple of decades. And, you know, the way the Russian government works, Putin is able to maintain power because he has the support of the oligarchs. The oligarchs are the richest men in the country, and I do mean men. They run the biggest industries. They run, you know, energy, transportation, media. You know, any major industry in that country is run by an oligarch, and these extremely wealthy men, they keep those jobs because Putin supports them, and it's this symbiotic relationship. They keep each other in power. Now that the rest of the world is targeting the oligarchs because people know that that's how power works in Russia, you know, there's this huge hope around the world that it's the oligarchs who will undermine him and eventually, you know, remove Putin from power. And you don't know, you know, the oligarchs, that their money's being frozen. You hear people chasing yachts all around the world, trying to seize assets. We've seen what's happened with Roman Abramovich, you know, being forced to sell Chelsea, one of the premier sports organizations in the world, is in chaos now, because he's forced to sell and they can't sell, you know, they can't sell merchandise or other things. So we don't know really what sort of shape the oligarchs are in. We don't know what the relationship is with the Kremlin. And the old days when an oligarch could just pick up a phone and say, this player works for me, get her out of there, those days are gone. And, you know, the life that they live over there, there's been some attention to the amount of money that Americans can make going over there. And again, it's, you know, it's a legitimate issue that WNBA players are paid low six figures. Brittany Griner makes what? You probably know better than I do, around 240,000 to 250,000. And she can go over to Russia and make more than a million just for a few months. And that's because the oligarchs put a great premium on the teams that they own, and they want to win. It's a huge cultural thing for them. But you're also, you know, and they're treated like stars. They get the full, you know, the, over there, they're treated like they're LeBron or Tom Brady. They don't get that here. But this is also who you're getting into business with, is guys who are, you know, a crucial part of what's essentially a criminal state.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Couple more here, and then I'll let you go. You and Michelle sort of posited this question, and I wanted to get a sense from you how you saw it. Is Brittany Griner in any more danger as a member of the LGBTQ community?
The possibility is there. Does it mean that she's in imminent physical danger right now? I haven't heard anything like that. When I talked to people around her, I was, you know, told that they feel, and they're talking about more about the American government, but that there's a commitment to ensuring her safety, you know, very vague statement, but that's what they said. But the what that does, the fact that she's gay means that in Putin's Russia, which is not exactly progressive, she could be used as a cultural symbol. You know, you hear it is, you know, you always have to be careful wading in, you know, working for a sports network about wading into geopolitical issues. But it is just undeniably a fact that the Russian government and the right wing in this country echo each other's speech when it comes to some cultural issues, wokeism. You hear that out of Russians now about the woke West, and that they are, that's part of the propaganda message, is that Russia is the vanguard against that. And so you've got a black, gay, American woman. If Putin decides he's going to use her as a symbol of everything that Russia is fighting against, yeah, then, you know, she is in peril. And that's what they're hoping doesn't happen.
So the last one for me, TJ, and it obviously seems very, very minor and small compared to the destruction and devastation and death in the Ukraine. My thought on this in terms of basketball in Russia and American players playing in Russia, my thought is that we're never going to see that again, at least in the next I don't even want to put a number on it, but let's, for the sake of it, you know, 20 years or so. It's a very, very tiny part of this story, but a sports component of this story, TJ, is that the money that WNBA players made in Russia and made maybe away from Russia playing against Russian teams in like the European leagues, that's over. I cannot conceive of a scenario where an American player would now play in Russia again, given what's happened with Griner, in addition to obviously the invasion of the Ukraine. Do you concur with that? It just, again, it's a very tiny piece of this, but what has happened here, I think, has systematically changed the market for women's basketball players who have usually used Europe to go make additional dollars for their star.
I mean, I think that is accurate, in part because you've also got the Russian economy collapsing. And, you know, I haven't heard anybody suggest that there is some easy path out of this war that Putin started on his own and seems content to let the economy crash around him. So the money wouldn't be there. The market wouldn't be there. You still have lucrative opportunities in Turkey, Israel, Italy. But even Adam Silver,
but they've often played the Russian teams. You know that
right.
the Russians have been a very good part of those European championships.
Exactly, and that brings me to a bigger point, which I think is that you started to touch on, which is just what Russian money has done to the sports world. I mean, even the NBA had a Russian oligarch as a member. As an owner. Yep. Prokhorov owning the Nets until just a couple of years ago. In the Premier League and in England, they've welcomed that money. You've also got Middle Eastern oil money that, when you start to look at the human rights abuses of those countries, I think there is going to be a reevaluation. Countries have been content to let this Russian money pour in. It's not just sports. I mean, anybody follows news or politics in the UK sees it's a huge issue because London has become this massive repository for Russian money laundering. So there are going to be repercussions in sports that people kind of in the past didn't really care where it came from. And you've even got media companies in this country, without getting too deep into that, who are funded by Russian oligarchs. So I think, there's going to be a big reevaluation of where that money is coming from, whether people are willing to tolerate it. I think the landscape is going to change.
It's well said. TJ Quinn is a investigative reporter for ESPN. He has done really, really interesting work on what's a pretty awful story, Brittany Griner being detained in Russia. Obviously, credit Michelle Vopel as well, the longtime and fantastic women's basketball writer and reporter who's helped with the reporting. TJ, I hope ESPN continues you on the story. It's a really important one, and I respect your thoughtfulness here in that you got to sort of navigate a very, very fine line between reporting on it, but at the same time, on a humanity level, understanding that there is a major downside, perhaps, for the person who's in peril here if there is too much attention on it.
Yeah, so, it's a little different than my days trying to figure out who the Mets were going to trade for to bolster the bullpen. There's a lot at stake, and I really appreciate you, letting me get into the nuance of it.
You got it. TJ Quinn, follow his work at ESPN and on Twitter. Thanks, TJ.
You hear that? Your dog knows spring is coming sooner than you think. Dog walks, dog parks, playing fetch, all the stuff your dog loves to do with you. But the warmer weather also means that fleas and ticks are coming back. Fleas and ticks are in the grass, in the woods, and even on their dog friends. Fleas are an itchy nuisance, can easily get into your home, furniture, and beds, which can be terrible. Ticks are even worse. They're hard to spot, but can carry disease and get your dog really sick. PetMeds has your furry friend protected with the best products to prevent flea and ticks all year long. PetMeds pharmacists connect directly with your vet to save you time and deliver the best products for your pet. PetMeds offers low prices on all flea and tick meds, including NexGard, Simparica, and more. And PetMeds AutoShip helps you save even more with additional discounts on regular shipments of PetMeds, dog food, and other high-quality supplies. So get ready for all the spring fun now. Visit PetMeds.com and use promo code PODCAST to save 40% on your first auto ship order. That's PetMeds.com and promo code PODCAST.
All right, I bring in Chad Finn, who's been on this podcast many times, the fine sports media writer and columnist, general columnist for the Boston Globe. Chad, there has been... I don't even know where to begin, man. Have you ever written about NASCAR? NASCAR's got the great expression for all the driver movement in the offseason. They call it the silly season. So this has been the true silly season for NFL broadcasting. We've never seen anything like it. 2002 was probably the closest when Madden left Fox for ABC's Monday Night Football. Fox named Collinsworth, Aikman and Buck as the three-person team there. Some are all retired, so that was a crazy time, but nothing's been like this. So let's start here. Just your overall thoughts at ESPN's Jimmy Pitaro landing not just Troy Aikman, but landing Joe Buck and Troy Aikman to do Monday Night Football.
Yeah, well, as a firm believer that broadcasters really don't move the needle on ratings, the salaries are mind-boggling for everybody. You know, Romo get his $180 million deal, so it's set the bar for everybody else here. But in terms of the broadcast and the hirings, I love it. I mean, Joe Buck's called the World Series since 1996. He's called the Super Bowl forever, and they've got another one coming up here in 11 months on Fox, and gives them a high-profile booth that, as much as I like Steve Levy, Louis Riddick, and I thought Brian Griese was pretty decent too, it just doesn't have the cachet that Buck and Aikman would. And I've written this in the last couple of months. I think Aikman is the best color analyst in football. If you're going to take an ex-Cowboys quarterback, he's the number one pick in my draft. And Romo, as great as he is number two. I think Aikman's become more candid. He's more critical of the league than any of those guys. And I think ESPN is getting him at exactly the right time. And I really think it's a smart move for them.
Yeah, I like Troy a lot. I agree with you. I think he's gotten progressively better. He works very hard. He prepares. As Trad and I are taping this literally on this day, Monday, I have a long, long piece on The Athletic, you know, having talked to a lot of people just sort of about, the whys and what it might mean for all these different networks heading forward. So, you know, feel free, it's a little shameless plug there. Feel free to check that out if you're into that stuff. And, you know, when it comes to, you know, you said something, Chad, that is absolutely accurate. Like, there's really no way to get a viewership return on investment at the money outlay that Jimmy Pitaro is giving Buck and Aikman. But the reason that these networks do this, and I think you hit on it, is one, you know, you want to put on the best possible product so that you can, on your most important property, which Monday Night Football is for ESPN, so that the audience sort of comes away feeling that they've been given a professional experience. And then in theory, you know, you'll continue to pay for and watch ESPN. There's certainly value to the league because the leagues ultimately vet all these broadcasters. And, you know, if you're ESPN, you want to have a broadcasting group that the NFL feels is big time so you can get big time games like the Super Bowl, which they're now in. Buck and Aikman certainly would present you with a really good story to come out for your media upfronts, which usually happen in May, where you make the pitch to advertisers about why they should advertise on ESPN. And there's a lot of sizzle if you bring Joe Buck and Troy Aikman out in a stage in New York and you're trying to sell that. There's no doubt people like Troy can be really good with media advertisers. You know, you want to sort of like finalize or land Ford or Coke. You know, you have Troy Aikman talk to the Ford rep for a couple of minutes. I mean, this, you know, everybody's watched Mad Men. This is sort of how these worlds work. So it's interesting, like on a purely like salary structure, Chad, there is no way these guys are worth this money, right? But one, you're worth the money that they'll pay you. And two, it's a little hard to extrapolate how much is the sizzle worth. And that's clearly what Jimmy Pitaro did here is he's paying for sort of a story, even if the Monday Night Football viewership numbers don't go up at all, which quite frankly, they might not, given whatever happens with the matchups next year and the competitiveness of the games.
Right. But you know what this does too, Richard? I think it gives Monday Night Football maybe a little bit more shine back.
I agree.
They've lost in part because of the schedule that they have, but Sunday Night Football is the number one rated show in prime time. That's not a sporting event, that's show for the last decade. And it at some point in the mid-2000s, it became the signature NFL event that Monday Night Football was when we were growing up. But if you look at it, you know, Tirico in the booth, they've made some curious hiring decisions. I don't think Drew Brees is working out the way they thought. And there's a little bit of room here for Monday Night Football to get a high-profile booth back in there and capture at least part of that big event audience back that they've lost here since, I don't know, since at least since it's been on ESPN. So in that sense, I really think this is a benefit to ESPN and adding a little bit more luster to Monday Night Football and recapturing a little bit of what it once was.
Yeah, we'll see. My only caveat, my only hesitation on that, Chad, is I think so much of viewership on Monday night and Sunday night too are, it's so viewership driven and storyline driven.
Yeah, Sunday's always going to win that.
Yeah, so you really like, the reality is if Monday Night Football gets Tom Brady like early, like that's going to be a big number. If Monday Night Football I'm just making this up, okay, like the Giants versus Dallas and like Dak Prescott's out for that game and the Giants are terrible, that's going to impact viewership. One thing I want to ask you about this, because I'm really sort of fascinated about this, how do you think Buck and Aikman coming in impacts the Manning cast, if at all?
Probably not at all, right? I feel like it's a distinct thing. The buzz that it generated really isn't equaled by the ratings, but the buzz is very valuable to them. They get a lot of great feedback and positive commentary about the popularity of that show and how good Peyton and Eli were. And, you know, the guests always generated interest. I remember, I had editors in the middle of the day on Mondays saying, do we know who the guests are yet? Do we know who they have? And you have to go check the Omaha Productions feed to see if they've posted it yet. And that's all valuable stuff for ESPN. But, you know, we saw what the ratings were. The viewership numbers were where what it was about 7 or 8 times the Manning cast number on Monday night for the regular broadcast, because most people, when they care about the teams playing, are still going to choose conventional broadcasts. I don't think they see an uptick from the group they have now to Buck Aikman in the ratings, as we mentioned before, but I don't think it means any sort of marginalization for the Manning cast either.
A real interesting story now is obviously what Fox decides to do. And from every person I talk to and sort of all indications indicate that Joe Davis is going to get bumped up to call the World Series.
Yeah.
That to me that would be a very smart move by Fox. I actually don't think it's even a hard decision. Joe Davis is an excellent broadcaster. He calls the Dodgers. He's called postseason games for Fox. He's really well respected in the business of baseball, in sort of the larger industry of the sports media. And he's at a perfect age, I think, for him to slot in. He's 34. Perfect age to slot in, Chad, and you've got your guy for the next, 10, 15, 20. I should say 20, because that's sort of that kind of career is generally like a unicorn, as Buck was. But they'd be in a great position, I think, just to slot Davis in. He can work with Smoltz or whoever. I don't think you have to go shopping elsewhere, because I don't really particularly think there's necessarily a better national baseball broadcaster than what Joe Davis will be. So to me, that's an easy one. You agree?
Yeah, it's easy and obvious, and he's tremendous, has a sense of humor too. He's actually older than Buck was when he got the gig. I think it was Buck 27, yeah. 28.
Yeah, exactly.
He's 52 now, so... But he makes all sense in the world. Though here in New England, Red Sox fans, 7 years later, are still bitter that Don Orsillo was allowed to get away. So anytime one of these national jobs opens up, people say, oh, Orsillo should get this. Realistically, it's really Joe Davis in the field.
Yeah. And listen, Orsillo is a national quality broadcaster and has done games for Turner
and Fox.
And he's good. Yep. I think Dan Shulman is fantastic. I reported that, he's not leaving his jobs, but he obviously would be a great World Series caller. But Fox already has the guy under contract. That's not a hard decision. I think you overthink it if you go elsewhere. The football one obviously is the real decision. That's the trickier decision. They have a very good number two team in Kevin Burkhardt and Greg Olsen. Kevin Burkhardt to me, would be a fine number one NFL play-by-play broadcaster. Again, I think if you moved him up, I don't think there's any issue about he's going to call a quality of game. And so really the decision is, in many ways it's tricky, but in many ways, Chad, it's simple. Eric Shanks and Brad Zager, the head of Fox Sports and the executive producer of Fox Sports, ultimately just have to decide if they think Greg Olsen is a long-term number one. If they think he's a long-term number one, then slot him into the position now, and even if it's a little bit sooner than you would have planned to, you know, you're investing in this team as your number one team. If they don't think he's the number one or long-term number one, that's where it gets, you know, that's where it gets interesting. And then you start looking outside of Greg Olsen right now and who could you put in this year? There just aren't as many candidates or obvious candidates to be a number one analyst, you know, coming in this year. So if they decide to go outside the box, or outside, I shouldn't say outside the box, if they decide to go outside their own organization, that's where it gets a little bit tricky. And then finally, of course, you know, I am sure they have done their due diligence, certainly by now as we're taping this and talking to Al Michaels' representatives. And that decision would be, do you bring Al Michaels in for sort of a short-term play? You have two Super Bowls out of the next 3 years. But again, I think that would send a pretty bad message to Kevin Burkhardt. You know, Kevin Burkhardt's not 30, you know, he's 48 years old. Like you'd be saying that, well, we're going to bring this other guy in to do these massive, massive games. And then it's your turn, kid, down the road. So Al Michaels to Amazon makes so much more sense to me from the Fox perspective, but you know, as me and you've been covering this a long time, not every decision makes sense.
Yeah, the one thing I'm kind of, I guess, disappointed with this whole process, I want to hear Michaels and Aikman together, because if I were ranking everything, I would have Al still number one as play-by-play and Aikman as analyst. And I was really curious to see how that would have worked. And I think Al was enthusiastic about the possibility. But, you know, Buck and Aikman is a known quantity and a really good one. I'm with you on Burkhardt. One of the knocks on Buck that really, I don't know, might have been fair at the beginning, but it really was not after he established himself as a, you know, an A1 type of broadcaster, was that he didn't pay the dues. Well, Burkhardt's the guy who's paid his dues. He's been saddled with some, yeah. He was a car salesman, right? In New York.
Yeah. Car salesman, exactly. Yeah. Really, yeah.
You know, Mets sideline reporter, I think, and saddled with some bottom of the depth chart, color analysts early on at Fox. He's really good no matter who he's with. I'd like to see him get it. I imagine the baseball side, he probably stays in the studio over there because he's the absolute necessary master of that zoo that they have on their baseball postseason show in particular. But I'd like to see him get it. I wonder if they have some concerns that he and Olsen at this point aren't the biggest names, particularly Olsen, who is – got rave reviews. He did one Patriots game, I think. I thought he was fantastic. But he's not a high profile ex quarterback. He's a really good ex tight end and just doesn't have that same buzz, again, to use that word, that maybe bringing in a higher profile broadcasting or more experienced broadcasting name would have. But if they go that route, I don't think it'll be a mistake. And I think it'll end up being pretty well received.
I agree. So here's sort of what I posited. If you're the Fox people, you can really sort of make this your moment to bring a new generation of broadcasters to your top properties. You bump Burkhardt up, you put Joe Davis in the voice of the World Series, you bump Adam Amin up, who I think is phenomenal, to make him your number two NFL yeah. broadcaster, and perhaps one day he could be your lead broadcaster on the Super Bowl or whatever. You bump Olsen up, and so you know you reward him for what was a really excellent season. You live with the fact that, yes, Jimmy Pitaro, you know, went Danny Ocean and stole your stuff from the casino, and they're going to have a much more sexier name booth. But you have saved Chad millions of dollars in salary, and you go to Lachlan Murdoch at Fox, Fox CEO Corp, and you say, hey, all right, we don't have Troy and Joe, but we have a really good team, and I just saved you $25, $30 million. So where's my bonus, sir?
That's cynical. So I like it.
And the view, by the way, both of us agreed the viewership's not going to change. Fox 4:25 Sunday, that viewership is not changing given the persons who are doing the game. Again, I'm not saying it doesn't feel bigger with Buck and Aikman. I totally agree with that sentiment, but that they're always Fox is always going to have a mega game in that time slot when they have the late game doubleheader. And so to me, I don't think you have any sort of issues with the public if Burkhardt and Olsen get it. But yeah, I mean, you know, it's Fox. They like to swing big. They're going to do their due diligence. And, you know, like tomorrow, if you told me it's Al Michaels and Philip Rivers,
oh, yeah.
Al Michaels and It's not gonna be Tom Brady now, who we'll get to. But like, had you told me that, like, I wouldn't have been surprised, because like, sort of Fox's MO is to sort of really sort of go big and splashy. I mean, any of us who covered FS1's launch sort of know how they love to go big and splashy. But I'm with you. I think if they stick with the people that they've actually hired, I think they're going to be in a good
place. What did you think about the John Lynch rumors that they went after him? Because I really liked him, but he wasn't
what is the difference? Here's what I would say. Tell me the difference in sizzle between John Lynch and Greg Olson. There's none.
No.
Like, why would you go after John Lynch? While I think John Lynch was a good analyst, he wasn't, in my opinion, again, it's all subjective, he wasn't transformational.
Tim Burkhardt and Moose Johnston for a while.
I mean, they were a fine, solid professional team, but by no means would I leave like that broadcast and be like, oh man, like I feel like, you know, this is the next Madden in summer.
That's what I have to describe Buck and Aikman too. Fine, solid professional, better than fine, but solid professional, and you know, no antics, which that really at this point in my life, that's all I care about, is not having to deal with shtick.
Yeah. And they got better as the years went on. I'm like you, I really like Aikman. I just think the guy, like, he's always prepared. He's been out of the game as a current player for a long time, but he still feels like he has a command of the people who are playing. So I think he's good. I mean, I actually think we're in a really great period where I think all the number one.
Aikman's also a great guy to deal with. I think we can admit that too.
Yeah. I've interviewed him. He's one of the few guys, Chad, as you know, when you've talked to him too, like at that level, he's a shooter.
Yeah.
That guy is one, comfortable in his skin. And let's just be honest, he has fuck you money. And he's just willing to, he'll just be honest. The guy gave me the best quote I've ever gotten on Skip Bayless, which I know got him in trouble there. So I appreciate, not Skip, Troy. So I appreciate, I always appreciate Troy's honesty. All right, last one real quick on this, and then I do want to get to Brady with you. What do you think of a potential Amazon booth of Kirk Herbstreit? And let's just, for the sake of this conversation, make it Al Michaels. That's a very sexy, high-profile booth. What I just don't know, and none of us are going to know yet until it happens, is what's the viewership going to be like? Are like people going to be excited to tune into Amazon, or is it going to be like Thursday Night Football from what we've seen over the last 5-6 years? If it's a compelling game, you're interested in it. If it's just sort of one of these ho-hum divisional matchups, you're like, I don't know. I don't have to watch that.
Yeah, again, it depends on the schedule, really. You think about Thursday Night Football when it first launched, there were just abysmal matchups. It felt like you got like Titans Jaguars every week, you know, Bengals Browns or something. It was just it felt like the league, and this is probably what they were doing, was trying to squeeze in every single team, no matter how lousy they were, into a primetime window at one point or another. I don't think maybe Aikman and Al would have driven a little bit of viewership there, though. Again, you know, I don't have to repeat my thoughts on how broadcasters actually affect that or don't, but I don't know if Herbstreit is a interest driver there. I think he'd be very good. He's the football games, the NFL games he's called in the past with Fowler, they've seemed like they've done it forever, but and clearly he wants to do it. I would love to be involved in the NFL too, but in terms of generating additional interest for Amazon, I don't think it really does. I don't think Al does either, because the rumors have been out there for so long that when it actually happens, it's not going to be this big surprise to anything or to anybody, or be greeted with great fanfare that Amazon landed Al Michaels, because at this point we're kind of waiting for the announcement.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear.
We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right, let's talk about Tommy Brady from your part of the world in New England there. So he's back. At least we'll take him at his word that he's back. And I know this is a big story in your neck of the woods in Boston or in the New England area. What I want to ask you about is both of us wrote multiple stories last year about how the networks were clamoring to get Brady games, and obviously everybody wanted the Brady returns to New England game. And so, you know, maybe because of like what we write and because we're sort of sports media nerds, my first thought when Brady, or one of my first thoughts when Brady came back was, wow, like this Chad, this has a, like a real significant impact on the viewership in the NFL. And so I think once again, you'd have to agree, right? It, like, you may be sick of Tom Brady. I get it. If you're not in New England or not in Tampa Bay, but the reality is like this guy's must-watch TV once again, and all these networks now are going to be clamoring for the Bucs games. The Bucs have once again become a national team.
Yeah, they have. I mean, one of the first things I thought of when that tweet came out last night that he's going back to the Bucs around 7:15 was to go look at the Bucs schedule and see who they had. And they're marquee matchups this year that's have exponentially greater interest now because he's the opposing quarterback to Joe Burrow. I mean, the first time they'll play against each other.
Could be the game of the year.
Rematch with Stafford, who we thought for a little while it ended Brady's career, that Rams-Bucks playoff game. He's got Patrick Mahomes again. Great history with those two already in their careers. So those games just have much more increased interest than they would if it's Patrick Mahomes against Blaine Gabbert or whoever the Bucks quarterback would have been. So in that sense, I had to file a Brady column this morning more about from the New England perspective. And one of the things I noted, it's really obvious, but the NFL is better when Brady's in it. And he had an argument as league MVP last year. Aaron Rodgers won it, but you could make a really good case for Brady there. And they just got the marquee quarterback back, who is going to be 45 years old when the season starts, but he may have had the best statistical season of his career since 2007 last year. So this is a good thing for the Buccaneers. It's probably just as good a thing for the NFL that he's decided to keep playing.
I know that you sort of a different, it's sort of viewed differently where you live because he played for the Patriots and then obviously left the Patriots to go to the Bucs.
Yeah.
I like Tom Brady.
I do
like,
too.
I think he's, yep. Yeah. I mean, I think he's
a good person.
I mean, not just that, but like, I just think like, none of us really understand what it's like to be in that kind of spotlight. Mm-hmm. And for a guy who's been in that kind of spotlight, as a general rule, I think he's done about as good as one can do. It's very hard not to sort of be under the griddle with that many people interested in you. And yes, I know about the Deflategate, everything, blah, blah, blah. But like, as a general rule, I like him. He's obviously been an amazing quarterback, but I think I don't have animus to Brady. Quite frankly, I have the opposite. What I am curious about, though, Chad, is how do you think the perception will be in the sort of the media coverage of Brady will be this year? Do you think people will be excited that he's back, or will he get tagged that like Tom is just selfish? He only wants to be about him. I know in New England, it's probably very split between the diehards who love the guy for everything he did, and then I'm sure there's a group that's like, we're tired of this guy, we're sick of this guy, et cetera. What I don't know is, like, does the New England dichotomy, is that echo the rest of the country, or does the rest of the country sort of think differently about Brady? And I just don't know. I actually really don't know the answer.
Yeah. Well, here it's really interesting because when he announced he was retiring, the response was, how could he not mention us? did that AP.
It was like a 20-day story in New
England. It was. And I was kicking myself like three or four days after that that I just didn't pick up on what it all meant. He never said the word retirement in that 8-page Instagram statement. It was all sorts of ways to write around it. And, you know, we took it as a slight and that he was still mad at the Patriots about something, which was a real contrast to what we saw this year in week three when all fences were mended. They had that great game, and then Belichick and Brady sat for a half an hour. And
he ran out before the game. Yeah. He did like
no, that was closure. Exactly. That's what that was. Yeah. And there's no animosity at all. And Brady, anyway, went down there and won a Super Bowl. So he wins any argument to this point that he wants to win. So it was silly to think of it that way. And then, but we all get caught up in it here. We're all like, why does he hate us? And should have been reading between the lines instead in that statement, which was, this might be goodbye to the Bucs. This probably isn't goodbye to football. Because it was probably 2 days after that, that stories started popping up with him wanting to play with the Niners and maybe ending his career where he grew up, playing for his favorite team. The Dolphins are interested, and it became pretty obvious that there was at least a decent chance that he was going to play again this season. So it's a different world here. I think if I'm in a fan base other than New England and Tampa Bay, I'm annoyed that he's back because he's still really good and he's ruined a lot of people's best laid plans over the last 22 years. But the NFL is really happy he's back. The broadcast partners are thrilled that he's back. And overall, I think it's a really good thing for the NFL. He's going to get asked a lot this year, though. Are you retiring? Are you retiring? And one of the things he said about why he said he was walking away, or however he phrased it, was he didn't want to be asked if he was going to retire or what his plans were. He just wanted a break for a little while. So he's going to be asked those questions again.
Yeah, there's no way he can escape that. I mean, I think that in addition to what he's currently doing, his future is going to be a story every week. You know, that's just sort of the deal, given that he, you know, unretired and history serves with Brett Favre and everybody else. It's going to be a story. Also, it speaks to, you know, it just speaks to his greatness. Like, people care. People, nobody's ever done this before. No one's ever played this great 44 in the NFL. So it's essentially going to be one of the biggest stories in the NFL on a daily basis. All right, last one, and then I'll let you go here. You're in an amazing city when it comes to baseball fandom. Or I know you don't live in Boston, but obviously you are part of the Boston community. Mm-hmm. I was trying to figure out, Chad, if like the work stoppage would have any impact on viewership interest in baseball. And I'm going to say no. Even though the fans rightfully were sort of ticked off at the fact that this went on for however many days during the middle of a pandemic. But I think at the end, those who are baseball fans are going to be excited to watch. Now, baseball's got its issues with RSNs, and it's got its issues with, like, the national product just seems to be, in my opinion, on way too many places. But, you know, baseball's made that decision to get the money. But I don't know. I don't feel like there's going to be a backlash on this one because the regular season is going to be played in full. That's my guess.
Dodged it. If games were canceled, not just those first six games that initially were before they decided they reached their agreement and decided they'd play the full 162, but also the ones that Manfred and the owners were threatening to cancel for the second phase. If that had happened, they would have lost a lot of people. For sure. I mean, just the response I've heard is generally along the lines of, if they do this, I'm out. And it seems like the message got to the owners, because I got to tell you, everything we've seen over the last couple of years was that the owners were really going to try to break the players union in this. And the 43-day gap between offers, trying to stir up resentment toward the players, and, you know, players really savvily use social media to get their message out this time around, which I think the owners miscalculated on. But all those things, I think, led to the owners having a change of heart here during negotiations and really recognizing that they were going to lose a lot if they missed games. But in general, the ratings, at least here in New England, they tend to be tied to how well the team is doing. I know that sounds simplistic, but there are people who, after 2020, were really frustrated with the Red Sox, and they had that miserable 60-game season, and just, you know, the world was a mess, but the team was also terrible. And then last year, they had a surprising, really good season out of nowhere, made the playoffs, knocked out the Yankees and Rays, and ratings on our local regional cable network were up 20% in that range last year. So it seems to me it's that way in every market. It's that same way nationally, that if the team is good, the interest is going to be there, even as people start the season pissed off at one side or the other after the labor negotiations.
Chad Finn is a media writer and general columnist for the Boston Globe. You can check out his work on that publication, online in that publication. Obviously, follow him on Twitter. He not only covers Boston-related stuff, but obviously does a lot of national stuff, especially when it comes to sports media. Chad, you'll be back. By the next time you're back, I feel like all the broadcasting positions in the NFL will be set. So we can evaluate when the final decisions have been made.
Hey, I love this silly season, and I like even more how much reader interest there is. And it's really it's pretty cool that it's like the fifth major sport at this point.
You're right. There's a reason. There's a reason all our editors and publications are asking us to write this, because the page views and subs go way up. You're right. Who would have ever thought?
I know.
Right? But it is. But man, it is true. Chad Finn. Thanks, Chad.
Hey, thanks, man. Good talking to you.
All right, back in the studio, my thanks to TJ Quinn and Chad Finn for their time and insights in the excellent conversation. If you like these kind of conversations, please head to the Sports Media with Richard Deitch homepages on the various places you listen to this. Leave us a five-star review and a nice note. That is how the podcast continues, and I thank you for the very, very many nice words you have said about this podcast. It's much appreciated, and it's definitely read. Heading back to the archives, last podcast before this, Bomani Jones and Jeff Pearlman. Bomani Jones is a new show on HBO. Jeff Pearlman, of course, wrote the book, that Winning Time, the very fun HBO show of the Lakers in the 80s. It's based on Brian Curtis of The Ringer. Prior to that, he did a podcast on the state of the Canadian media with six Canadian sports journalists. Before that, did a piece on Troy Aikman's big move with Jimmy Trane of Sports Illustrated. Then interviews with Mike Tirico, Michelle Tafoya, and many others. Head back to the archives. Hopefully you'll find something you're interested in. I want to thank Patrick Antonetti for all his hard work, and Cadence 13 for their support of this podcast. Most appreciated. Most of all, thank you for listening. We'll see you soon on the Sports Media Podcast.
I'm Mark Chapman. Welcome to the Planet Premier League podcast. Each week, Cesc Fabregas, Nader Manua and myself talk all things Premier League.
As a player, you don't have time to talk.
No.
You don't have time to make a plan. You just need to deal with wave after wave after wave.
We watched Coach Carter and he said, afterwards, the game's just about doing this for your teammates. And I remember looking around halfway through the film and half the squad was asleep.
Planet Premier League. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.